Hello there, it is Dave Pompez, and this is week three, part three. And we're going to talk a little bit now for the next 10-15 minutes about bedtime snacking. Now, first question I want to ask, I want you to be really honest with yourself with the answer here, is how well you sleep. Do you drop off to sleep effortlessly? Do you tend to wake up one or more times per night? Do you feel anxious when you wake up? What's the pattern behind that? And if that is happening on a regular basis, it's not going to be ideal, because sleep, as we're going to talk about next week, is massively important for optimizing your wellness. Now, as I say, we're going to look at sleep in more detail next week. And I think really I could have included some more information about sleep in this lesson, but it's so important that it really needs its own week. It needs an entire section dedicated to itself so that you can really understand and grasp, you know, not just giving it, paying it lip service, but really getting deep into why sleep is so important, not only in improving the way that you might be feeling now, but also potentially reducing your risk for developing problems with your health later on in life as well. Now, there's no question from working with several thousand people and reading the research on sleep that lack of sleep, or what would we call sleep deficiency, is pretty much epidemic. Just last year in 2016, there was a really big study done. In fact, it was the world's largest sleep study, and it was actually conducted by a bed manufacturer, but it partnered with Loughborough University. And I thought it was kind of cool because Loughborough is the university that I did most of my studying at. I was there for 4 years. And so I read this study with a great amount of interest for many reasons. And basically what the study was doing is it was estimating something that it called the worldwide sleep debt. We could call that worldwide sleep deficiency quantification, for example. But the sleep debt was defined as the amount of sleep we think that people need, or scientists think that people need, to effectively function mentally and emotionally the next day. So talking about how much sleep do you need to function well the next day, minus the actual sleep that they get each night. So the difference between the two figures, the ideal amount and the amount that people are actually getting, they called the sleep debt. And they have found a lot of really interesting things out in this study. One of the really interesting things that struck my attention was that 77% of people in the UK in the study actually fail to wake up each morning feeling refreshed and well rested. And only 2% said that they actually wake up feeling refreshed and well rested every day. And I thought that was pretty staggering, really, because we have the power with technology and with ancient wisdom to really be able to sleep soundly every night. And we should be waking up really refreshed and really full of energy and beans the next morning. I remember when I was a kid, I used to get up. I used to bounce out of bed at around 5:30 a.m., particularly in summer. I would go down and immediately start watching cartoons as soon as they came on the TV in the morning. And I can just remember not having any problem whatsoever waking up and getting up. Of course, as the years went by and I got myself into teenage years and in my 20s and what have you, and I started to go out and socialize and drink and go nightclubbing and what have you, that kind of pattern really started to change. And I got to the point in 2007 when I wasn't feeling well. And what led me into doing all this work that you're really learning about now is that I wasn't sleeping well at all, and I just couldn't get going in the morning. It was taking me probably 2 or 3 cups of coffee in the morning before I actually felt human again. And so it was very interesting to see these statistics in the study, because they're fairly similar to how I used to feel. Now, you might be watching or listening right now thinking, yep, that's me. I feel lousy, or sometimes I feel okay when I wake up. Sometimes I feel great, but most of the time I'm just not, you know, I'm not with it. I'm not feeling like myself at 6 a.m., 7 a.m. Now, they also found that China was the most sleep-medicated country, with what I thought was really staggering, actually. 1 in 5 adults, that's 20% of all the adults who they took part in the study, consuming prescription sleeping tablets. Now, we've got to remember that they're prescription, so there's going to be a cohort of people who are also taking non-prescription sleeping aids, whether they are herbal, whether they're just over-the-counter pharmaceuticals. And so you probably see that it could be two, maybe even 2 in 5, maybe even half the people could be taking something to try and aid their sleep, which is, it's crazy, really. Now, what does sleep affect? Well, if we take the 7 areas of health, sleep affects pretty much all of them. Some of them a lot more directly than others, though. I think energy is the obvious one. If you don't sleep well, your energy during the day is not going to be particularly good. Mood is also going to be affected. Going to feel groggy, irritable, potentially, possibly anxious, and maybe even depressed. Concentration and performance, whether that's exercise performance or whether it is performance at work in another kind of work environment or performance environment, they're all affected for sure. We know that from the research, and we know that just from our own experiences most of the time. But the immune system is really impacted by lack of sleep. And the digestive system is hugely affected by a lack of sleep, which we'll talk about in a little bit more detail next time. And very recent research shows categorically that the gut bugs, you know, this microbiome, this population community of bacteria and fungi and what have you, and parasites that are living in your digestive system, they are profoundly influenced by your circadian rhythm and sleep habits. And then further down the line, because of all these different physiological consequences of poor sleep, we actually end up with a higher risk for things like type 2 diabetes, obesity, and possibly even heart disease and cancer as well. So it's hugely important to get this right. Now, the common or classic sleep problems that I tend to see in people most, and this isn't everybody, but it's a lot of people, struggling to actually get to sleep in the first place for various reasons, or possibly waking up somewhere between midnight and 3 a.m., waking up, not really being able to get back to sleep, really having intermittent and interrupted sleep. Now, this is often caused by a dip in blood sugar. If the blood sugar levels drop too low, stress hormones come up because the stress hormones are designed to get that blood sugar level optimized again. So blood sugar drops too low, stress hormones like cortisol and adrenaline come up, and your heart starts beating faster, your body's preparing for fight or flight, it's preparing to run away from a predator, and all of a sudden you wake up. And then because those stress hormones are high, you can't get back to sleep again. And then that starts to develop into a pattern. Now, we can go a long way to resolving those issues using the recommendations in this program, so don't worry too much about it. The other things that can exacerbate this problem, particularly the blood sugar issues, is when people have problems with the liver because the liver stores sugar, or when the adrenal and the thyroid glands are not functioning properly, and that's epidemic. You know, whether you've been diagnosed with low thyroid function or not, or imbalanced adrenal function, I'm telling you, it's completely epidemic. We see it all the time in testing, and many people are walking around with symptoms such as cold hands, cold feet, slow heartbeat, constipation, dry skin, hair falling out and what have you, which are all signs of adrenal and particularly poor thyroid function. Now, you can arrest some of these blood sugar related issues using bedtime snacks. Now, obviously, I realize in part two of this week's material, we talked about intermittent fasting. And in an ideal world, if we can have our dinner, say, at 6:30, 7 p.m., and then the next morning have breakfast at, say, 7:38 a.m., and we leave 12 or 13 hours fasting, that can have particularly beneficial health, or should I say health benefits. But that can be long-term. What we're looking at here is resolving a short-term issue, because if you want to get yourself up the vitality scale and you're really not sleeping well, you're not going to do very well, because sleep is of paramount importance in getting those short-term issues dealt with. Over time, once you've gotten your sleep optimized, you can then look to adapt your evening schedule to get a greater fasting period in overnight. That's not a problem. But if you're not sleeping well right now, it's more important to deal with that than it is to deal with the intermittent fasting benefits, in my opinion. Now, if you sleep really well, sound like a baby, and you're waking up pretty refreshed, you probably don't need to consider having a bedtime snack. But the right bedtime snack, formulated with the good balance of proteins, fats, and carbohydrates, can really keep that blood sugar level, keep it stable, and prevent you from waking up, and obviously help you get to sleep in the first place as well. Now, I've definitely observed this in people, myself included, that sometimes a really well-balanced snack can help people fall asleep, because it just means that the body has everything it needs if it's timed right and the blood sugar is optimal and you can fall asleep and stay asleep. But the snack has to be really properly balanced. So as we said way back in week one, when we talked about breakfast and we talked about those carbohydrate dominant breakfasts full of cereal, full of sugar, full of fruit juice, bread, pastry, and what have you, the blood sugar levels spike up after having a meal like that, and then they dip down again very rapidly. And that's what can happen if you have too much carbohydrate in your bedtime snack. Similarly, if you have too much protein in your bedtime snack, or you just have protein on its own, the amino acids in the protein can also stimulate a spike in insulin, which is the hormone that controls blood sugar. And when you get an insulin response from too much protein, it will shunt too much sugar from your blood into your cells, and that can also drive the blood sugar down. So with too much carbohydrate, your blood sugar goes up and then dips too much. With too much protein, you end up in a situation where the insulin goes up and it shunts what blood sugar you do have into the cells, and that causes a dip in the blood sugar as well. So two slightly different mechanisms, but it shows you the importance of having the right balance of nutrients to get that blood sugar level optimized. Now, just want to be really clear here and say that the bedtime snack, or a lack thereof, like a bedtime snack deficiency, for example, is most certainly not the only reason for poor sleep. There are other deeper reasons. There are reasons to do with your sleeping environment, your bedroom environment, for example, noise and light exposure. EMFs from alarm clocks and mobile phones and things like that are very important as well, as we'll talk about next week. But things like digestive infections can prevent sleep, because the immune system is more active at night. If you have a chronic infection in the digestive system, H. pylori, parasites, for example, the inflammation levels due to the enhanced immune response at night, when the immune response is supposed to be more active, can actually cause problems and keep you awake. In fact, inflammation at night can drive up cortisol, which is one of your major stress hormones. The same cortisol hormone is one of the ones that flies up too high when your blood sugar levels drop down. Okay, so you've got to remember that it's not just necessarily about this snacking issue. Heartburn, another chronic pain, if that's worse at night, it can keep you awake. Emotional stress, you know, what's going on in your life that's running through your mind. Adrenal and thyroid imbalances, as I said earlier. Sex hormone imbalances. A lot of women find it hard to sleep at different times of the menstrual cycle because their estrogen and progesterone levels are off, and that can be resolved as well. Nutrient deficiencies, things like the best example would be vitamin B6, is very important for dopamine, serotonin, and melatonin levels. So if you don't have enough B6, magnesium is another one that can create stress and lack of relaxation that can influence your sleep as well. And then we have things like electromagnetic fields that I mentioned a moment ago that we will discuss more next week. Now, the timing for a bedtime snack, if you're going to use one, is the key. If you've eaten your evening meal at, say, 9 o'clock, then you don't really want to be putting a bedtime snack on top of that. I'd like you to go to bed around 10, 10:30. We talk about why that is next week. But if you have your dinner at 9 p.m. and we want you in bed by 10, 10:30, that's really not going to work very well. So the timing is really important here. I'd ideally like you to have your evening meal no later than 7:30. And that means that you can then have a snack once the evening meal is digested properly, without putting the snack right on top of the meal sitting in the stomach. You can have that at about 10 p.m. and it will work really well. So you're looking at about a 2.5 hour gap between having your evening meal and then having that bedtime snack. Now, if you're doing intermittent fasting, of course, you still want to be eating your meal at about 7:30 ideally, but you don't want to be eating the bedtime snack at all. But I'm going to leave that to you. Of course, you can come and ask us questions about your situation on the Facebook page, or you can join one of the support calls and ask us questions if you're not quite sure about what the right thing to do in your situation is. Now, what examples of bedtime snacks do we have? Well, if you tolerate cow's milk, this is a really good one. If you don't tolerate cow's milk, you can use goat's milk or even sheep's milk. But what we're doing here is we're mixing some warm milk with a little bit of protein and some salt and a little bit of sugar and fat. So you're getting a really good balance of the macronutrients. You have a cup of warm goat's milk, cow's milk if you can tolerate it. You can put about a quarter of a teaspoon of salt in that milk, or a little bit less if you want to, depending on your tastes. You can use Wright salt, which we've mentioned and I've given you in your resources previously, which has a few different minerals in there, not just sodium. It has the potassium and the zinc and what have you in there as well, and the magnesium. You can use sea salt, or you can use Morton's canning and pickling salt, which is just pure sodium. And it's actually the sodium in this case that we want to keep the blood sugar more stable. Now you can, I know sugar is deemed as really bad by everybody. We talk about carbohydrates and sugar later in the program in more detail. But if you want to have half a teaspoon to a teaspoon of sugar in this milk, or put a teaspoon of honey in, that's okay. Why? Because we're getting carbohydrates, sugar, into your snack there to make sure that your blood sugar stays stable. And then you can put a little bit of coconut oil in there, or a little drop of MCT oil, which is the medium chain triglycerides, which are the kinds of fats that really help your body with its energy production. Very, very functional, healthy oils that you can put in there. And you basically mix all that together and you drink it. You have the protein in the milk, the amino acids, you have some sodium in the salt to help balance the blood sugar, you have some carbohydrates in the sugar or the honey, and you have a little bit of fat in the coconut oil or the MCT oil. This works really well for some people. Now, if you don't do very well on milk in general, then you can try another liquid snack, which is freshly squeezed orange juice, but you also have some gelatin in there, and you still have the oil and the sodium in there from the salt as well. So the preparation for this one is that basically you dissolve about a half a tablespoon, possibly reducing to a couple of teaspoons of the green canister collagen powder, which dissolves in cold water. And then you mix in the orange juice, you mix in the salt and the MCT oil, and then you have a nice little drink there that you can sip on about a half hour before bed, so that it'll just get your blood sugar nice and stable, bring down cortisol, and help you drop off and nod off to sleep. You can tailor the amounts of all of the different ingredients and find a mixture that works well for you. Now, if you don't want to drink liquid at bedtime and you'd prefer to have a more solid snack, there are plenty of different ways that you can do this as well. For your protein source, you can have some goat's or sheep's cheese. You can also have a slice of meat or chicken, maybe something that you've cooked earlier or something that you have in the refrigerator. But I do like cheeses more because they just have a lower inflammatory amino acid blend within them. And we want to try and keep certainly the inflammation down at night. But if you don't do cheese very well, then you can have meat and chicken to serve this short-term goal of getting you sleeping well. And then what you do with that is you just have a piece of fruit. The fruit contains all the sugar that you want. And so you can have a half a banana. You can have maybe a couple of plums. You can have some grapes. You can have some berries. There's pretty much anything that you can do, or even a small glass of orange juice. As long as you have really good quality protein to go with that, it's going to help balance out your blood sugar a little bit better. So you can do a liquid snack with milk. You can do a liquid snack with orange juice and collagen powder, or you can do a more solid sort of classical food-based snack as well. So there's a lot more to come on the topic of sleep next week, but if you want to use a bedtime snack for now because you think it might just help you get to sleep if you're having problems just now, you can use the options that I've mentioned, and I've put some additional choices, additional recipes if you like, in the resources section for you as well. Okay. So next week, we're going to move on and look at optimizing sleep in general, because it's very, 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 very important. It's tied to many different functions in your body, not just in terms of short-term health gain and resolving symptoms, but also long-term disease risk as well. So I'm really looking forward to revealing that information, sharing it with you next week. For now, if you have any questions, as always, please drop us a line on email, or come and visit us on the Facebook page. Make sure you tune in to the weekly calls so that we can answer any particular burning questions you have as well. My name is Dave Hompez, and I look forward to seeing you again next time. Cheers.